obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Go any further, let's welcome God into this room. Invite our God. You know, it's Saturday afternoon and life's in session. Let's get it on. I spent 42 years of my life dying, and I didn't know that there was a thing called living. My name's Scotty Ashlock, and I'm an alcoholic.
Scotty!
And I use my last name because it's my last name, and I have my permission to do so. And that's right, straight out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I have permission to do so, I have permission to do so. And there's an old friend of yours that asked me to tell many of you hello for him. And I don't remember who that was. But he moved to Grand Junction. He and his wife moved to Grand Junction, Colorado, quite a while ago. He did want me to give special acknowledgement to some musicians that played at their wedding. And anyway, that's Bill McLaughlin and his wife. And I use their name. They gave me permission to do so. They do send their love and respects, and they're sorry they're not here with you. I guess they were quite a big part of this for many years. But that's what happens in my life, is those kind of things. I found out the difference. I was taught the difference between anonymity and confidentiality. And I know you all heard of that character Keith Drum. And years ago, he used to talk about when he got to Alcoholics Anonymous and went to a meeting, and Sue wanted to know everything about it. And he kept telling her it was anonymous. And she said, wait a minute, last Saturday night, the TV station, the newspaper, the fire department, sheriff's department, SWAT team, all the neighbors were out on the front lawn. You were butt naked, knee-walking drunk with a shotgun. And all of a sudden, you decide to not have a drink, and it's a big secret? You know, that's pretty much the way it is with me. Wherever I was at, they knew a long time before I did that I was an alcoholic. And you know, and it's only by the grace of a very, very kind and loving and forgiving and helpful God that I get to stand here sober today within the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have that coming. The way that I lived my life, I do not. I say that I do not deserve it. Old timers tell me that I do. In fact, I was whining to Larry last night, man, I don't deserve to be here. And he says, yes, you do. And all I could think about, now, after that, if I had this to all do over again, I would not have went to that meeting last night. Because I didn't get a wink of sleep. All that was going through my head is, I need to be more like Larry. Yeah, holy. Yeah. How do you follow that? How do you follow such a heartfelt message of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, I gave that considerable prayer and meditation last night, and it's just exactly what's going on here this weekend. Keep that fire burning. Keep that fire burning. You know, and Larry is one of, what, 4,000 or 5,000 people that are blowing on that ember. Keep that blaze going, you know. People have traveled from all over the nation to be here. Now, there's people showed up here today that weren't supposed to be here this weekend. Those things just happen. How does that happen? Well, in the book it says the age of miracles is still with us. And my latest sponsor, Lanny, used to say there's miracles in these rooms. And if you want one of them, you got to be here. You know, and we show up here and we get him. Oh, I do need to tell you, and that by the grace of God and the Fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous and strong sponsorship through them 12 steps, I've not had a drink since December 5th, 1987. And I have a sponsor, and he's sitting right there, and he has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And they all really need sponsors. But because of that, I sponsor men who sponsor men who sponsor men who sponsor men. You know, and that's keep the fire burning. You got to give it away to get it, you know. And that's how I was raised. I wasn't an instant success in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not doing too good. I've kind of had a bad reputation lately here of doing away with sponsors. You know, ain't fired one of them, but they're gone. they're no longer in sight, and I want to bring them up, and I'll tell you their dog's name, their telephone number, and that was Kip Collins. Kip Collins taught me how to live sober, starting on December 5th, 1987, and he gave me some good direction. And then when Kip things got the way they got with him, and Lanny Thomas became my sponsor. You know, in May of last year, right before Kip's 30th birthday, he went to that big meeting in the sky. And then this year, Lanny went to that big meeting in the sky. And not only myself, but a whole bunch of alcoholics and family members, neighbors, former employers got to be with these men while they made that transition into that next world. And it wasn't a bad deal. It's a great loss. But it was a beautiful thing because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we got to see that thing. And these are the guys, I'm talking about this because these are the guys, when I got here, what's it say in the book? An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Stephen, that man right over there seen me come in when I came in the door after my last drink. I seen him take a 90-day token, and he was 16 years old. I was weighing 107 pounds. My teeth were all broke out. There were only two people on the face of the earth who knew me that would speak to me. I tried to get to San Diego Sheriff Department to arrest me, and they said I was pathetic. They'd come back and get me when I was dead. That's how it was, you know. And I had darkened the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous 11 years before I had my last drink. I was 12-stepped 12 years before that at the Colorado Territorial Penitentiary, old Cell House 7, B Block, by a man named Don Pritz. He came down there and told me that he was an alumni of the institution and a friend of the warden's. So I knew he was a snitch. And he told me he could get me out of there early. And I'm going, oh, really? And then he went right into that pitch. And I'm going, wait a minute, you talking about never drinking? He said, never. I'm going, no pruno, no nothing, nothing. Talking about never getting high? Never. I told him, I ain't interested. I'll go ahead and do kill my number. And I did that. When I first did show up 12 years later at Alcoholics Anonymous up in Craig, Colorado, it was the last Saturday night of the month. It's a birthday speaker meeting. Guess who the speaker was? Yeah. And I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. And one of my pet peeves where I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, there were 28 people in rooms and five Alcoholics Anonymous, AA. The rest were B&B. They weren't going to any lengths. They were not carrying this message, you know. They said it don't say the word sponsor in the big book. You know, ain't no hurry on messing around with them steps. You know, one a year or so is okay. And, you know, and you don't have to get into any big hullabaloo about it. And guess who liked a softer, easier way? There were five people who were beating on that book. Those were the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was looking for a softer, easier way. You know, I don't want to put no effort into anything. That's another thing on that. There is a solution. There's one more sentence to that, and it says, this we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. Now, when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't honestly want to be there to begin with. I was trying to shut her up and get that Moffat County Sheriff off of my butt because they were interfering with my drinking. So I didn't do any of that stuff. Well, and of course, I didn't stay sober. And somehow I ended up over in Denver, Colorado, and with the snakes and the shakes. And I go to this little speakers meeting on a Saturday night. Guess who the speaker is? Yeah. Well, and I'm not doing the deal. See, I come in here, you know, you guys are supposed to be bikers. But when I got here, I was way tougher than you are. Way tougher. Way cooler and way smarter. You know, I was smarter than the smart people, and I had it all figured out on how I was going to do this. And by this time, every time I'd come back, you got this book deal, you know, and everybody's talking about it. And so finally, I bought one. And one time after I got out of the penitentiary, I thumbed through it. And the next time I got out of the penitentiary, I read chapter 58 or. Page, whoa, guys. Chapter 5 on page 58. Yeah. But the first part of it, you know, is kind of boring reading. I didn't pay too much attention to that. You know, I want to get right to the meat of the deal. You know, step one, yeah, I'm a drunk. Step two, you bet there is a God. Step three, yeah, uh-huh. Step four, won't be no need for that stuff. You know, don't do that, so there's no need for that. 5, 6, of course. Who keeps you sober? God will just keep you sober, right? All you got to do is skip on the sunbeams of Jesus, and everything's going to be wonderful. And that didn't work out too good for me. You know, those 12 steps, I thought, there ain't but 12 of them, that's all. They're all one-liners. Any dummy can look them over and have them down pat. You know, what's the big deal here? You know, I've done a lot more complicated stuff than this. And that didn't work. You know, it just did not work for me. Now, by this time, I have been to enough ANA, Alcoholics Anonymous, where you people, you members of Alcoholics Anonymous, this fellowship, were carrying the message. You were showing me precisely how you recovered, but I couldn't let go of my old ideas. You see, I'm the guy that should not be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I should not be an alcoholic. I was never abused as a child. My mother, my mom and dad, I never seen them have an argument. I didn't go to a Catholic church at all until I married one. And I was abused sexually. none of those things. I had none of those reasons to be an alcoholic. But the problem was I never felt comfortable anywhere that I was. You know, when I was a little kid, hanging out with the other little kids, you know, it just wasn't comfortable. You know, I'd go and try and hang out with the big kids. And that didn't work out good because they wanted to push the little kid around, take his stuff, and that turned into a big problem. So then I end up in the house with the women. And the women in my family, you know, they always had some kind of plan for the kid that can't behave. Like they want you to sing a song or play the violin or worse yet, just sit down and be quiet. Have you ever tried that one? Just sit down and be quiet? Well, I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't do it. You know, everything I'd done right was wrong, and I had no reason to be that way. See, this middle-class family that didn't have any problems, there was no drinking going on. There were no problems going on. It just a middle-class family. And the men in my family, they would all have one drink on holidays, like Memorial Day. Now, this weekend, they would have gotten together for the big dinner, and after the dinner, every one of them would have had one shot of whiskey out of the bottle and put it away. And that's all they taught me about drinking. And, you know, my dad was my best, absolutely my best friend. I'm the oldest of 6 kids, and my dad was just a good guy, just a good, hard-working veteran man, country boy. you know, and I was a shadow. My family didn't spend any money on infant pictures at the hospital. You know, it was get her in there, get that kid out of her, and get her back home and get her back to work. So there wasn't any infant picture of me. The very first picture of me was in the shop with my dad, and I'm in a diaper, and I'm carrying a lug wrench. You know, and that was it. I hung out with my dad. And he taught me those things that fathers teach little boys and developing them relationships, and it's good. And my mother was the very spiritual lady. You know, she became a Sunday school teacher when she was 14 years old, and she just died in January, and her regret on her bed was that she couldn't get over to the church to teach the ladies' Bible class. So that's where I come from, you know, and that's how things are. The big problems is the car broke down, and is Dad going to have to work on it all night Saturday night so Mom can take the kids to church? You know, the way it is. These are the bad things. And then in 1957, my dad died. And, man, it devastated me. The way that I found out about it, my mother's stepmother told me that my dad had died, so I was the man of the family now. And in our family, that really meant something, being the man of the family. That meant that you provided, protected, you know, and you done that. There wasn't nobody knee-walking drunk. There wasn't nobody getting beat up. There wasn't no holes in the walls. And I took that literally. I thought that I was supposed to do that. But the problem was I didn't feel like a man. And I ain't quite 12 years old yet. That was in June. I turned 12 in August. And I'm trying to figure this thing out. I don't feel like a man, but I've been watching Dad. I know what men do. I've been watching Uncle Bud and Uncle Gerald and my grandpa and my great uncle and my other grandpas and all that stuff, and I know what they do. They're just something, you know, I know you're supposed to get up and go to work on time and do a good job, da-da-da-da-da, but there's something I just didn't feel like a man. And right before Dad died, he had bought a TV at a hawk shop, and it was one of them TVs, some of you guys remember it, had a little wire on it you had to hang on to get a picture on there. The only things that were on TV, they had one news show once a day at 10 o'clock at night, and they had Queen for a Day. Now, that wasn't all that interesting to me. And then they had a cowboy movie and a war movie. And the cowboy movie, the boys rode into town and tied their ponies up at the hitching post, went in the bar, ordered four fingers of red eye, threw it down, Black Bart lips off. They get in a big fight. You know, that turns into a range war and a big gun fight. The good guys win. He kisses a girl, plays a guitar, rides off into the sunset, lives happily ever after. All right. And then the war movies, about the same thing. That's Audie Murphy, you know, and it was a kid that was raised on the farm. And he, you know, he already knew how to shoot and wrestle and slip around in the dark. So when the call to arms come and he went off to military, went to boot camp, got out of boot camp, of course, went down to the bar, you know, after boot camp, having a few drinks, the Marine lifts off. There's a big fight, you know. Windows and mirrors are getting broken and tables, and then everybody gets up, shakes hands, goes off to war. You know, they become heroes, come home, marry the little girl, you know, white picket fence, station wagon, live happily ever after. And I finally figured it out. The reason I don't feel like a man is because I ain't had no whiskey. And the neighbor had given Dad a pint of Seagram 7 for his birthday in March of 1953, and it's July of 1957, and I know where the bottle's at. My mother was the one that lips that touch liquor ain't touching hers. She had no idea there was whiskey on that property. I was 11 years old, and I knew exactly where it was at, and I knew exactly how much was in it. And I was watching, we were watching one of them movies, and I can't remember if it was a cowboy movie or the war movie, and And it dawned on me that I hadn't had no whiskey. So I went into that kitchen. That's where it was. Dad had the whiskey hid in her kitchen. She'd never find it. And I went in there and I got that bottle out, spun the cap off of it, and I took a big pull on it, like I'd seen the men in my family do, you know, when they went out to the barn and done that one drink. And I took a big pull on it, and it went down. Man, it burned my throat, and it burned that all the way down through there and burned my belly. And it got real hot, and it started coming back up, of course. The problem was it didn't do it like it does with normal people. Thought of gagging never crossed my mind. The only thing it done to me was my belly got hot, and it started feeling warm, and that hole that was there closed right up. Just like that. And my chest got big, like a man's chest ought to be. And my shoulders got broad and tough, like my Uncle Gerald. He was a big boy, you know. My neck swelled up like an old bull, you know, and I started feeling that testosterone feeling, you know. And my cheeks got hot. And that whiskey hit the top of my head, and it's the very first time in my life I ever felt okay. And I just felt okay. Man, it was great. And I got bad news for you. If I could have a drink of whiskey today and it done that, I'd probably go do it. But that's not what happens. We know that. And that's what I'd like to share is what happened after that. And what happened after that was I felt okay. And I'd snuck out of that living room with my mother and them other kids to go find that whiskey, and I strolled back in there. We're okay now, you know. That started my hips licking cool and tougher and all of that stuff, that one drink of whiskey. And I sat down and the other movie started, and it came time for them to have their drink of whiskey, and I instantly realized that that drink that I had had, even though I drank it out of the bottle, not out of a glass, was not Four Fingers. I'd shorted myself. So I got back in there and had me another little nip, see, to bring me up to the full mark. But see, that was the problem when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1967. I wasn't at the full mark. I could never get to the full mark. I could never get enough whiskey in me. But I had that little drink and went back in there. And it took me 15 minutes that evening to drink half of that pint that had taken my dad, the neighbor, and his brothers 4 years to drink. And that set the style and the pace for my living and my drinking for the next exactly 30 years. Now, what I drank was whatever was available. How much I drank was however much there was. The way that I got it was whatever it took to get it. I've heard people say they couldn't afford to drink. Problem. Haven't you noticed they make them windows out of glass? No, what's a problem here? As long as they do that, how can you be broke? How can you not? You know, that was never my problem. In fact, the truth of the matter is that whiskey never was my problem. For 30 years, whiskey was my solution. It worked for me. It helped me to fit in, to feel comfortable, just to be okay. That's all I wanted it to do. And it will do that. And it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it doesn't say alcoholics. It says men and women drink alcohol because they enjoy the effect it produces. And that's why I drank. But there, my problem is, that's not my problem, that's my solution. And it didn't work for long. You know, it's like that Cliff Roach talks about it, that 8-second window. You know, that drink would last for about 8 seconds, that one, and then I need another one. And that's what Dr. Silkworth talks about in Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, that phenomena of craving. And I didn't know anything about that and didn't want to, you know. I didn't want to. All I wanted to do was drink. And I knew nothing about that criminal world or none of that stuff. The men in my family were as tough as they needed to be. They were hard-working men. They were all veterans, you know, back through five generations, you know, the call to arms coming, mom the flag, apple pie. They'd done all that stuff. But they didn't do any of that other stuff. And I looked at that. Now, to drink like I drank and do the things that I'd done, you have to get over into that world. Irritable, restless, and discontent. I shot my first man when I was 12 years old. You know, and why? Well, he was peeking in the window, you know, and I thought it was my job to protect my mother and my sisters. My dad was dead. And he was a guy 2 years older than me that lived up the street. You know, it wasn't that big a deal, but I thought it was. I've been watching too much TV and there ain't nothing on TV. That's how my head worked. It just didn't work right. You know, I done the things that I thought I was supposed to do. My thinking, there's the problem lies there, and the problem centers in my mind, and that irritable, restless, and discontent. So I started doing that stuff. You know, I started stealing hubcaps, and, you know, and breaking windows to get whiskey, and getting in trouble. Thank God I graduated. Well, I kind of graduated. I had enough credits to graduate, but they wouldn't let me on the property. So I didn't wear the little hat with the tassel, and I didn't get the little booklet thing. But that was in 1964, and there's a lot of guys in here who's old enough to remember. In fact, I ought to be over in that veterans meeting. I'm more of a veteran than I am a biker. I didn't get on a Harley-Davidson motorcycle until 1959.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
This thing, I'm still trying to think on how to be a good man and how to get it right. Because, see, I've been trying to get it right. All that trouble I got into in the community and at school, I didn't want to do that. It wasn't my plan. You've heard a jillion speakers talk about they didn't go to their career advisor. Yeah, da-da-da, and me either. Phenomena of craving. That was my counselor, and I kept doing that. So my escape then was the call to arms, and that's what all the men in my family have done, the call to arms. So off to the Army, off straight to Vietnam, and I loved it. I loved it. I was a forward observer for a recon search and destroy and ready reactionary force, and I stayed there 3 years. I stayed there as long as they would let me. My enlistment was up. They told me I had to come home. I told them I wanted to re-enlist, and they told me I couldn't. And I said, yeah, I've seen a lot of guys do it. And they said, well, you can't do that. You have to go back to the States first. And I asked them why, and they said, because you need psychiatric evaluation. And that was my plan. I was coming back to the States. I was going to go see the shrink and go back to Vietnam. That was my plan. That deal worked good for me. I don't know about you guys. They give you an automatic weapon, all the bullets you want, and all the hand grenades you can carry. It's a good deal for a guy that's irritable, restless, and discontent. You have no trouble getting booze or drugs. None. It is not an issue. And that was the plan. But you see, I got off this airplane in Oakland, and I'm supposed to go to this psychiatrist. And it's dark when we get off that airplane, and I give this guy $50, and he gives me a ride to the liquor store. And I don't know, the psychiatrist never showed up. Kind of like what happened to me when I first came to Southern California. I was trying to stay sober. I was at a stoplight on my scooter down there in Escondido. I was 29 days dry, and that was it, dry, that's it. And this car pulls up to next to me, and this guy says, hey, know where I can cop? I don't know a soul. I just hit Southern California because I'm on the run. I don't know a soul. I'm going, yeah, but I can't take you over there. Give me your money, and I'll meet you at the 7-Eleven. It's another one of them guys. He went to the wrong 7-Eleven. But what that done was fueled my phenomena of craving. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and it does say in the big book things about drugs, you know, morphine and other sedatives. And then he took things to get him going in the morning, you know. And I'm an alcoholic, and see, and sometimes I needed some of that stuff. And I tried that game of the maintenance program, you know. You know, just a little bit of social heroin for a while. But the problem with me is no matter what I do, I get thirsty. I need alcohol to make those other things work, and it's just my life, alcohol. I got to have it. And I'd done like everyone, you know, and going off into this world of crime, and I learned how to do it, and I learned how to do it real good. When they wouldn't let me stay in the Army, Cassius Clay, they couldn't drag him in there with D9 Cat. They won't let me stay. I want to do it. I'm good at it. I'm good at it. And they won't let me stay. And now I'm out here, and a lot of you are old enough to remember Vietnam vet. You ain't getting a job. You just ain't getting a job. And you ain't fitting in too good anyway because of the hippies. And I have to inform you at this time, I am not a hippie. I'm a well-groomed mountain man. And I get back to Colorado Springs, and Jane Fonda makes her little pass through there. Didn't work out well for her. Our county sheriff said she was inciting a riot. And it was. But nobody wanted to hire a Vietnam vet at that time. And, well, there's way too many of us, and we were nuts. But there were some other people who needed some money collected. And I fit right in there. Now, this attitude that I have now, hey, I was raised with the right spiritual training, basic Bible, you know, love, forgiveness, tolerance, salvation, all that stuff. And then my dad, the proper ethic and all of that stuff. I know all that stuff. But here, what I know, what my head says, because see, here's the problem. You do need money for whiskey. It's not so much you can get the whiskey by breaking the window at the liquor store. But the bondsman and the attorney, them suckers are always wanting cash. How many attorneys we got in here? Come on, give it up. I knew he was here. It's like over there in Riverside County, that prosecuting attorney. But you know what I found out? It's if I take a 6.5-inch barrel on a 357 and shove it down your throat, you'll pay your bills. And that's okay with me at that time. To me, that's not a problem. That's a way to make a living. And that's where I went to. And I got further and further and further away from this God of mine. I had a lady ask me, I'll give her up. The lady takes a picture. She said, out there in Colorado, do you have a God of power or a God of convenience? Well, we have a God of power in Alcoholics Anonymous in Colorado. And that's what I had known about as a youth. But I got away from that. You see, I divorced myself from my God. I got away from all of those concepts, those principles. Nothing to do with that because of the way that I had learned to live. And you know what? On and on and on, just like everybody else. Jails, penitentiaries, nut houses. I love them nut houses. Man, you go there, rest up. They feed you good. They pamper you. You know, they give you some pills, you know, and get you right back out there so you can get drunk again and do it all over. And I'd done all of that stuff. But I finally got up to the point where I could not stand living anymore. I had to leave Colorado Springs late one night because it was time to go. And I ended up in North San Diego County because there was a little thing to do there that involved my sister getting married, and so I could show up there, and it was good smoke screen, and da-da-da-da-da. And I did, and I showed up dry, and I tried to stay dry, but it didn't work, you know. That deal sitting at the stoplight. I got dried out again. Something else come up, you know. 29 and a half days. I couldn't make it 30 days. Do we have some fellas, some folks in here who have less than 30 days of sobriety? All right. Welcome. And those are the honest people in the room, you know. And for you honest people, that's why we're here. And I'll make you a promise that Clifford A. Collins made me December 5th, 1987. If you don't want to feel the way you're feeling, if you do not want to live the way that you've been living, you never, ever have to again if you don't want to. You do have a choice. You do not have a choice, he told me, on whether I've lost the ability and the choice in drink. But I have the choice to pick up that simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. That's where it comes down on me. You know, God does not keep me sober. Sorry, folks, don't say that in Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. What it says is God provides a defense. You see, many, many times because of that religious upbringing, and I come into the rooms and I heard people say, who keeps you sober? And I thought, if I just show up, God will strike me sober. When he didn't strike me sober, I knew it was because I was too bad of a guy. He will do that for you, but he won't do it for me. See, I divorced myself from God. I had lost that thing about God is all love, God is all power, and it wasn't happening for me. But it finally got bad enough, and I ended up in that sewage ditch at the corner of Rancho Santa Fe and Linda Vista, weighing 107 pounds. My teeth all broke out. Only two human beings on the face of the earth would speak to me, and the San Diego sheriff wouldn't arrest me because I was pathetic. They were going to come and get me when I was dead. And that's when I finally remembered that I had Kip Collins' telephone number, and I called him, and I'd crawled into an abandoned dirt floor garage and laid there for 3 days, chewing on my tongue. And what I'd had remembered was all of those things that my mother and her people had taught me at that church about asking God for help. And I remembered what the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, the ANAs, had said about there is one who has all power, that one is God. And I remembered little things about praying for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. And somehow in the DTs and convulsions, I was able to say some kind of little prayers. I can't tell you what they were. It was more than just God help me, but I can't tell you what it was. I'm really not sure. I know the concept, but please, God, help me and help me to get through these shakes. And is that demon real? And man, how can I get a hold of them people to come and help me? And at 3 days, I did. I was able to get to a payphone. I called Kip Collins, and he come up to that abandoned garage. And he picked me up, like, well, after he got done laughing at me, which I'll tell you what, I'd have whipped. He was a hippie. Clifford Amos Collins was a hippie. He had long hippie beard and long hippie hair and a fat hippie belly, you know. And he went to Haight-Ashbury, and he used to make wind chimes and had a turtle logo. And man, he was a hippie. And when he got there and got that garage door open, he looked at me and he just laughed his fat hippie ass off. And then he picked me up like a little kid, because that's what I was. I was a pathetic, sick child of God, and I could do absolutely nothing for myself. It had gotten so bad I couldn't break that window to get any more whiskey. And the whiskey that I'd had would not take away that pain. It wouldn't fill up that hole. It wouldn't shut off the screaming no more. And he made me that promise that I made you. And that's true. I've never felt like that again. I don't live like that anymore. And he asked me some things. You willing to go to any lengths? Follow my directions? Do I have your word? Shake my hand. Boom, we're ready to go to a meeting. He took me to 7 meetings in a row. The 8th day I called him up, asked him, where are we going? He said, I don't know where you're going. He said, I've showed you where there's one every day. And I'm going, well, I don't have any transportation. He said, could you get to get some whiskey? And I'm going, yeah. He said, well, then you get to a meeting. And if you can get to a meeting, they'll get you home. And that happened. And he gave me some other directions, like get on my knees every morning and ask God for help. Read page 60 to the top of 64. Read page 449 to the end of the chapter, which is now 417 to the end of the chapter. The guy that wrote that said, don't tell newcomers that. What are you trying to do? Kill them? And that was Dr. Paul. I still read that. It hasn't killed me, but I ain't quite right. I react to everything different. Like here, August the 5th was the last time I smoked a cigarette. I smoked four packs of cigarettes a day for 56 years. And I went to get on the Chantix thing, and they made me go see the psychiatrist. Oh, by the way, I'm federally mandated to see a psychiatrist still. I ain't had a drink in almost 28 years. I'm federally mandated to see the psychiatrist. They say the only reason I'm not locked up is because I don't act like I think. They ask my psychiatrist, why is that? And he told them, because he's an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what the doctor said about me. My wife says I have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and the doctor said that. She's a little judgmental at times. This Chantix stuff, this smoking stuff, and that psychiatrist says, I don't know, Scotty. He said, well, we ought to let you have any of that stuff or not. And I'm going, why not? He said, it makes you homicidal. I'm going, I am homicidal. And he says, well, yeah, but it makes a lot of people real suicidal. And I'm going, no problem there. Mom said that suicide is the only unforgivable sin, and Dad said it's a coward's way out, and I've always believed that, so that ain't a problem. And then they told me about upset stomach and diarrhea and all kind of stuff. I started taking that stuff. Guess what? The best I ever felt in my life. The side effects were wonderful. The Grand Junction Veterans Administration Medical Center had a special team on me for that. And they're still trying to figure out why I didn't go crazy. And it's simple. I'm backwards. I ain't right. I'm just not right. I've got grave emotional and mental disorders. I'm in full flight from reality, you know. That's a deal. Now, here's the other deal. Kip Collins started me doing that reading and that praying and going to them meetings and calling other alcoholics and getting involved. You know, I still have five commitments a week to groups. I still have three main service commitments. You know, the last house on the block, the Salvation Army, that's way over in another district. My home group, which is the Robert Roost Men's Group in Austin, Colorado, we will rustle your H&I commitments. If you ain't taking care of them, we'll come over into your district and do it. Now, back there, we don't have that much, but we will do that. We take care of the county jail. We take care of the work release. That's what my home group does. That's what they taught me how to do in Vista, California. And I started out in a men's group called the Hole in the Wall, and it was just so successful that we started the Robbers Roost men's group. And it was so successful that they started one and two in Atlanta, Georgia, Hibbing, Minnesota, Rogersville, Missouri. Now we got four in the state of Colorado. And you know what they do? They keep the fire burning. That's why. This deal ain't about me. That was a problem all the time. I thought it was about me. You know, why ain't God keeping me sober? Well, dummy, it's because you ain't doing what you're supposed to. Finally, when I had read those pages 60 to the top of 64 enough, we had gone over the doctor's opinion. I found out what an alcoholic was. We got to chapter 3, and I conceded to my innermost self that I was one of them. And then there was that problem. I had that problem with step 2 because I thought, I'd been hearing this. Who keeps you sober? God. Well, my head converted step two to God would restore me to sanity. And I really thought it said that. And I had an old timer, an old man named Don Newman. He made me read that over and over and over to him, and finally had me do it one word at a time and then one letter at a time. That's what it took for me to find the C in that step. And he said, that's it. All you have to do is believe that God is capable of that. So I finally got step two. Okay, God's capable. That's it. That's all it says. Came to believe that he's capable of it. And I finally got that. So then that made it easier for me on step three. See, I've been trying to get it right all my life. And now when I'm reading that page 60, and it says, just what do we mean by this, and just what do we do? And there I was almost 43 years old, and I finally found out that was why I couldn't get it right. I've been trying for 30 years to get it right. The only problem was I didn't know what it meant, and I didn't know how to do it. And in three pages, they teach us in that basic text. I have a new employer. I have a principal. You know, I have a God that I work for today. And as long as I keep close to my God and do his work well, I don't drink. If things pop up, God provides a defense because I've kept close to him. You know, my head will every now and then say, you know, shoot, it'd just be good to have a drink with the boys, and then they wouldn't think you're a nerd. And the phone rings and that guy calls, you know, and he's got some whining problem he wants to talk about. And it just wipes out my good idea of having a drink. You know, it ain't fair. When are we supposed to get out of here? 3:30 or so. Huh? About 3:30. 3:30? Is it 2:30 or 4:30? 3:26. Well, I am Kip Collins trained now, so hell, he believes that you need two of them CD things at least. No, what I'm trying to get to is service and keep this fire burning, carry this message. And that's what happened for me. You see, when I did get on my knees with my sponsor, his pit bull named Sam, and a snitch that he sponsored. Yep. And we said a prayer that goes something like this, and if you care to, if you know it, please join me. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. And take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of thy power and thy love and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. I got up off my knees that day. I was almost 43 years old. And it's the very, very first time in my whole life that I knew what peace of mind was. It was the first time that I've enjoyed it. It certainly was not the last, because just now it done the same thing today that it done that day. By saying that prayer, I enjoy peace of mind, because it's been explained to me what that prayer means. It's quid pro quo. All you gangsters knows about that. Got to give something to get something, you know. First thing they teach at court. But I've got to learn, and it says on that on page 63, when I learn to care more about you than I care about me, then I'll get to be okay. And that's it, and that's what Larry was talking about last night, and the message does not change. I've heard people say Alcoholics Anonymous is changing. No, it's not. Same book, same words in 164 pages, same doctor's opinion. People have changed. You know, and that's what we have in these rooms. And be real careful. If you're new, be real careful. Go to meetings of A&A, not meetings of B&B. Go where they're beating on that book. go where they're talking about, you got a sponsor? Well, then get one. That's what it is. This is a serious deal. This is about heart attack, graveyard, dead, dying miserably. And that's the part is the misery. And that's where I got to, was I was graveyard dead. They gave me a token at 28 days because they didn't think I was going to live 30 days. And that's the last one they gave me until a year and a day. That guys I got sober with don't believe in all that. But that's it. That serious black parts in the book. I seen one of the banners last night, the black parts. And that's it. And that's what these guys taught me. They taught me to be of service. And now that I've got to move back to Austin, Colorado, we got more people in this room today than we got in my county. I got to go four towns to get five stoplights. I don't know why that one town's got two. Got no idea. I think they got a good deal on them when they bought them. But it's the same thing. See, in my neighborhood, we have sick and suffering. Here, where in Southern California, there may be hundreds or thousands, we have two or three, and that's enough. And that's all it's my responsibility is to carry the message to the alcoholic that suffers. And you know what? Because of this very, very kind and loving and forgiving and helpful God, that a bunch of lying, thieving, cheating, gun-toting, drug-dealing prostitutes taught me about, I get to do that. See, I get to be an agent for my God, and I get to carry His message to those who suffer. And as a result of that, not only do I not drink, which is not the point of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've developed a relationship with God of my understanding. I get to, on a daily basis, improve my conscious contact with my God. That thing of enjoying peace of mind is the result of keeping the fire burning, enjoying life. And, you know, I just got warmed up. This is a first for me. It's the first time I've shared since my two sponsors have died and my mother. You know, the lady who gave me life in the beginning and the two men who returned it to me. And it's been a little difficult. You know, I miss those people. But you've taught me how to deal with that. I don't have that burning, hurting sorrow, just a great loss. A little girl I heard say one time at her father's grave, the tears we shed are the price we pay for the joy we had. My friend Big Jack, I sponsored him, and he became my spiritual advisor. And on, he's leading that. He sent a spiritual bundle to me today. It just showed up. You know, he's still here. Those things happen. There's things happen in these rooms. If you're new around here, stick around. And especially go to them places like Larry was talking about where it smells like puke. And there's some guy out back pissing on the wall, you know. And all the cars got whiskey wrinkles in them. Man, those are the places to be. That's where the real stuff is happening. Where people are suffering. And if you're new or you're suffering and you do these things, then you'll get to get what God gave me, and that's people like these, you know. I'm safe. Nothing can happen to me. I am surrounded by the toughest people in the world right now. Nothing can happen to me. I'm not going to get drunk. I'm not going to get assaulted. And it's just so comfortable and so nice to be with you all. And with that, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. Now, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. If you want that, take these steps the way they did, you'll get it. Thank you and God bless you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.